F1A, number 23B.
Let's take the example of life, which is always something that is important to our life. And here we can see that God, the infinite well of life, I have shown that life is a well of life, is constantly flooding men and the universe with infinite. Our ideas of life are inspiration, exaltation, sublime individuality, and ascension. Therefore, Romans 2, therefore the belief of life in matter, that's a counterfeit of life with a capital L, can never succeed in lifting consciousness out of a problem. So I could have said, therefore it can never succeed to give us inspiration, exaltation, sublime individuality and ascension. I just put it together. I could have stated that way. So I just say it cannot do the same thing, cannot lift us out of a problem. The next one is, life constantly comes to all of us as an idea of life, as the abundance of life. You see, the abundance of life, life is a small L, which means life in being, abundance in existence, abundance of life as newness of life, as infinite support and maintenance. These are all ideas of life. I could have put in provision. Therefore, Romans 2, the counterfeit of life, capital L, material life, can never succeed in giving us true riches. Giving, therefore, no abundance, can give no true abundance, no true newness of life, cannot truly support us and maintain us. You know that matter can't do that. Yes. Okay? We go to truth. And so we take various ideas of truth and say God, truth, is constantly revealing himself. So I took another term for coming to us, for the Christ idea. Here it comes to us as a revelation. So he's constantly revealing himself to men and the universe. That's the Christ, as ideas of truth, namely as the true standard of manhood, the stature of manhood, the sonship of God. Truth comes to us in the sixth day as man, as the sonship of God, as divine consciousness. If I think in the line of truth, it comes to me as divine consciousness. Romans 2, therefore, mortals, the counterfeit of God, truth, can never succeed in establishing true manhood. Can never do the same as what truth does. But the belief is that it can. Or another example of truth is that truth constantly expresses itself to one and all as the infinite victory of right. That's an idea of truth, the victory of that which is right, the righteousness, the rightfulness. As the infinite dominion of true manhood, it comes as dominion. As the form of perfect health, that's another idea of truth. Therefore, now comes the opposite. Romans 2, therefore, any human sense of truth, a human sense of truth, in contrast to the divine truth, capital T, therefore a human sense of truth and right has no chance of winning through. Can never be the victor, can never bring a victory. Human right can never be the victor against divine right. Yes. Come to love. Again, just see the rhythm of it. God, love, is constantly bestowing on his universe. I took another term, bestowing. Well, bestowing is the Christ. You can say, well, love bestows, yes, but that's a Christ office. Coming, gives something to. Always when God gives something to, it's a Christ message. So he's constantly bestowing on his universe ideas of love, namely infinite fulfillment, peace, rest. We know these as ideas. Romans 2, therefore a human sense of love instead of divine love, a human sense of love can never succeed in attaining universal salvation, can never really bring us fulfillment, can never really bring us true peace and rest. Or another, love constantly imparts to everyone. I've taken imparts, impartation. Can you hear love imparts, but it's in the Christ office. It comes from God too. So we have another sense of the Christ. Where have I been? Yeah, love constantly imparts to everyone ideas of love, like impartial motherhood, impartiality, motherhood, the infinite design of love, as an infinite plan, the assurance and comfort of love. Love is the comforter. Therefore, Romans 2, any sense of human planning, now you get the counterfeit, human planning, care and motherhood, can never succeed in bestowing true fulfillment. Always take the synonym and then the counterfeit. The counterfeit may be material or it may be human. Still a counterfeit. Here I have taken a few human counterfeits, like human planning, human care, human motherhood. Even that, the second degree, can never imitate what God is doing. Never. But the belief in the universe is that it can. That the material plane of things can have power, can achieve something, that the human plane of things can achieve something good. It can't. It's only the divine coming from God to man that can do something that stays and that is eternal. Yes. Now, I shouldn't ask the silly question, did you understand it? But I guess you could follow. Now, as I do this, and as I read it, naturally, the impression and the feel and the atmosphere I got is that this is rather stereotyped, that it is a stereotyped way of thinking through a subject, and the term stereotyped has usually a negative connotation. It's in ruts. But that's so. Outside science, science is always stereotyped. A law is always stereotyped because you can't deviate from a law. So it must be what it is. It must be in the straight jacket of the law, namely in the straight jacket of the definite factors and the definite relationship. Therefore, the moment we tackle laws in divine science, then the best thing we can do is to go through these laws in a very stereotyped way. Because only then are we training ourselves in the strict confines, so to say, of a law. And don't deviate into another law. Now, just as we train ourselves in any other faculty, no matter if it's music or sports or whatever it is, it's always the exercises and the finger exercises which we make on the piano that are necessary so that something that is of the nature of law becomes, so to say, our inner nature, that becomes us, so that we don't have to think anymore with the finger exercise now, which finger should touch which note, but that it does it automatically. So that is true in all other abilities that we train ourselves through exercises so that they become so natural within us that we don't feel anymore that they are something rigid, that they are something stereotyped, that it is repetition, but that it becomes tonality. A law becomes just a tonality. And the moment it becomes tonality, it gathers spiritual power. And that is what we want to achieve. So instead, you see, what do we do if we don't think about laws? What do you think then? That's my question. That's usually my answer. People come and say, oh, you with your laws. Yes, my laws, yes. I'm very happy to have found those laws. Though all the others don't like it. Practically nobody likes it. It's now, how many years? Since 60? Huh? It's now 25 years. A generation. Usually a generation is counted as 25 years. It's already a whole generation that passed by. And in general, in the main, these laws have not been accepted. Not these laws. To think in laws has not been accepted. And this is something that should shake us. Just as I said right at the beginning, how Weizsäcker said, well, nothing will help the world today than a deep shock. Just as the prophets were shocking whole Israel and said, look here, you can't go on in your old ruts. You have to go forward. You have to go out, away from the law and to the Christ. You have stayed too long just in the law, and therefore you had had no grace. Therefore you had not seen the Christ. Now it's time that you are shaken up and that I tell you something about a new paradigm, and you have to make a paradigm shift, and you have to see that God is ruling the universe and that He is coming to each one of us and to each tribe and will do what God wants to do. This was a shock to the Israelites. And so I have taken the subject of the minor prophets, not so much because I had to find another subject for a summer school to be busy, but because I really felt, I hope the time may get ready to try it again after 25 years. I haven't tried it in between anymore. I tried it 25 years ago to show the students in Europe that there are laws and that we should think according to laws, that the textbook demands laws, that the textbook says there are laws of God. Nobody could say what these laws are. So at least we have to try and see if we can find them, what these laws are. And we haven't just gambled spiritually or speculated spiritually to try to define laws. I have shown you through the whole week what an exact line of development went on step by step from the biblical text up to the matrix and now from the matrix to the laws. And I have been staying very strictly and very closely, always to the system. I have been working only and showing you only that only system intrinsic elements have been taken into consideration. No individual inspiration. No subjective nice thoughts. That was cut out completely, entirely. Only that what the system contains I have taken in. And that's why it took me 2 hours this morning just to show the order from the inductive reasoning from the biblical text step by step. There were many, many steps that we have seen until the matrix. Now the matrix has no value at all if we don't know how to use it, how to apply it, how to work with it. Now how are we going to work with it? We are going to work with it by seeing what that matrix is all about. It's about the Christ. That's the overall thought. What is the Christ? The Christ is always that comes from God to man. That's always the Christ. Therefore, it begins to tell us something very practical. That it says, look here, you solve your problem not through metaphysics. I come back to metaphysics, which we have taken in the first hour. That's why I showed you metaphysics. That metaphysics has no Christ. Thinking has no Christ. Only God has a Christ. Willpower has no Christ. It's the Antichrist. The only Christ, the only power that can solve anything is the Christ power. That Christ power comes from God to us. That Christ power is not the power of thinking, the power of positive thinking. That's not the Christ. That is working in the realm of mentalism, but not in the realm of spirituality. So here we find the practical application of the matrix that says, okay, if we have to work about something and see clear about the situation, just see that, then you start out with the synonymous term, that the Christ comes as mind to us, as spirit to us, as soul, principle, life, truth to us. And so we begin to get the first law, which says, all right, see, or let me go one step back, if we have a problem, if we have to work something out, this is always because we believe in duality. We wouldn't have a problem if we wouldn't believe in the duality. If we wouldn't believe that something next to God is a creator, has power, has law, has intelligence, has action, has substance, etc. We would never have a problem if we would not believe in something next to God. Therefore, how can we solve that? And so the very first cornerstone we lay is that we correct this false belief that there is something next to God that can either do good or evil. That can either do evil or can do just as well as God can do. That's the belief. That medicine can do just as well as the divine mind can do. That the judge can do just as right as the divine mind can do. All these are beliefs that there is something next to God that can also do something just as good as God or can do something against it. Both is a latent belief that is constantly within us, constantly within us. Now, just to correct that by a statement may not be enough. Just by the statement that only God, good, comes to man and the universe, and that there is nothing besides God, good, that can also come to us and also do something, either good or evil. This statement is so general that it is nearly empty. Because then we have to say, what do you mean by God? And what do you mean by next to God? So I have to answer, well, with God I mean mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. And I elaborate. It becomes more colorful. And I can say, and what I mean with that which is besides God, I say that's the counterfeit of mind and the counterfeit of spirit and of soul and principle, life, truth and love. And so I have already quite a colorful picture, with lots of hues in it, and shades in it, so that it becomes fuller and fuller and fuller than just a general statement. And so if I know my synonymous terms and the counterfeit of those synonymous terms, I can elaborate on that general law, as we have done here on these pages, and can start out and say, well, that means, you know, that means that mind is always coming to me, is always manifesting itself to you and to me and to every situation as the power of mind, as the action of mind, as the law of mind, and therefore no other mind, no human mind, no mortal mind, no erroneous mind, no political mind can achieve that also, can also have power and action and law. That's not possible. Yes? Can you see? It's a very practical law. And by taking that law and elaborating through the synonymous term and their counterfeits, naturally I make it more practical. It applies then finally to every argument that comes up, that there is also something besides God that can do something. And herein I see the value of training ourselves, educating ourselves, culturing ourselves in laws, because then we are not just wandering around with our thoughts here a little and there a little bit without any consistency. The laws bring a straitjacket, a very good straitjacket, and says, this is the law, but now fulfill that straitjacket as much as you can with your synonymous terms, what you know about the ideas of the synonymous term, which counteract the counterfeits of these synonymous terms. Yes. Can you see that? Huh? Yes. Again, that question, I bring it up again. Why law? And I say, what else? What are the students thinking when they are not thinking in terms of laws? What are they thinking? I wonder. I would like to ask each one, say, if you don't think in terms of law, what on earth are you thinking? And do you think that what you are thinking is science? Or are they just isolated truths? They are isolated truths. If they are not in laws, they are isolated truths. And we know that isolated truths have no power. We must understand the system, the whole system. So what's the use if I know and have learned that 5 times 5 is 25 and that 6 plus 7 is 13 and things like that, and I have isolated statements and I've learned them very diligently, very religiously, very earnestly, and know a lot about these various facts in arithmetic. Is that science? They are truths, but not scientific truths. Can you see that? That the truth is not always a scientific truth. And that's where the students shake their head and say, well, a truth is a truth. How can a truth not be a truth? Well, I don't say that. I say a truth is not always a scientific truth. A truth is only then a truth, a scientific truth, when it is built into a whole system. Then it is a scientific truth. If I say 2 and 2 is 4, it's a truth, but not a scientific truth, unless I know the whole numeration table. If I know the whole system of arithmetic, if I know addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division within the realm of arithmetic, then 2 and 2 equal 4 is a scientific truth. If I don't know the system, it is a truth, but not a scientific truth. The parrot can repeat it. He too can say 2 and 2 is 4. and he doesn't understand what he says, and he cannot prove it. A truth becomes a scientific truth when it is seen in its system. Therefore, here, when a truth is seen, for instance, within a law, then it becomes a scientific truth. If I state such a law as we have stated with Roman 1 and 2, we have stated the truth, which is a scientific truth, the moment I can elaborate it. What's the use of the law of gravitation when I don't know how to elaborate it? What shall I do with the law of gravitation when an apple falls from the tree? What can I calculate? Only when I apply it to that, I can make use of it. And so here too. Only as we go through those laws and say, I can elaborate, I can put in place of the fact or God, I can put their mind, I'm allowed to do that, that's legitimate, because mind is God. I can put their spirit, I can put their soul or principle and life and truth and love, and in this way I give to my factors always a variation without leaving the law, without hurting the law, without deviating from the law. And so why shouldn't you sit back once for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes, and say, instead of just always saying that all well-known statement that doesn't work, and that doesn't have any power, and just say, well, there is only one God, and that God is the only God, and that comes to me always as God-like, and therefore anything besides God has no power, is not doing something good. It doesn't do a trick. You can say that the whole day, it doesn't do a trick, because it's empty. There are terms. But when you fill that empty shell with a lot of goody-goodies, with the synonymous terms, with the ideas of the synonymous terms, with the counterfeit of the synonymous terms, then suddenly there is something in it. And we fill that with a content. But we would not be able to do it if we would not stick to one certain definite law. And in order to show how these laws vary from one prophet to the other, we'll take tomorrow other laws. And the more laws we take in, the more you will see how definite they are and how they have a specific application and not the general application.